This is Audible.
Fostering Faust. Written by Randy Darren. Narrated by Stephanie Savannah. Chapter 1. Alexander looked around the room and found that everything was gray. The walls, the chairs, the table, the wooden roof, the stone floor. Additionally, everything had a misty quality to it. Nothing felt tangible or real. Hollow, even. Holding up a hand in front of himself, he stared into it. Lifting his other hand, he touched them to each other. Or tried to, at least. His fingers slipped through his own flesh and came out the other side.
"Surprise, you're dead," said a female voice.
Alex spun around and tried to pin down where the voice was coming from.
"I'm not sure you'll be able to find me by looking like that. I'm not dead, or even there," said the voice.
"Maybe you should join me, then. Talking to thin air isn't helping me," Alex said.
"What if I already have?"
asked the voice, much louder and from the center of the room. Turning to face the speaker, Alex found himself staring at not much more than a darkened shadow.
"Do forgive me, but I think it's best if I keep myself in a simpler form. It's not like you'll die of shock or anything, but you mortals do tend to have problems when I show up in my normal form. You have a tendency to not believe what I say," said the gloomy, taunting figure.
Frowning, Alex stared hard at it.
"You said I was dead."
"I did indeed."
"Yes. It isn't every day you can scratch the inside of your own hand," Alex said, demonstrating his fingers going through his other hand. "So, how did I die?"
"Heart attack. Middle of the night. You pissed yourself, crapped your pants, and your maid found you 2 days later. Several lovely photos got out and were plastered all over the internet. No kids, no wife, no friends. You were buried the next day, and no one who cared attended."
"Grand," Alex said, nonplussed. He'd always assumed that'd be his end. Didn't make a bit of difference to him. Moving to the table, he pulled out one of the chairs and tried to press his hand against the seat. It felt solid.
"Please do have a seat. This conversation would be much easier if I didn't have to raise my voice. Quicker, too. And time is important right now. I'm not sure how long my husband will be distracted, and I'd love to strike a bargain before he returns," said the dark wraith.
"Your husband? A bargain?" Alex asked, sitting down in the chair.
"Indeed. I'm a married woman with a loving husband. I'd happily pull your guts out and use them to jump rope if he asked me to. I'd pull your liver out and devour it, if that was what he wished," the wraith said, her voice breaking and going up an octave, then down too.
"Got it. Crazy."
Clearing her throat, she patted the table in front of her. "But yes, a bargain. You're dead, and on your way to the deepest, darkest, nastiest corner of your universe's hell."
"What?" Alex asked, alarmed. "Why? I never did anything seriously wrong. Never hurt a single person in my life."
"You're right. You didn't. But there's a problem for you when it comes to responsibility," said the shade. "You see, you were a, what was it, chief operations officer?"
"Yes. Yes, I was," Alex said, his heart beating hard in his chest at the idea of going to hell. "How do I even feel a heartbeat?
Aren't I dead?
Yes, you really are dead. You feel a heartbeat because your mind is telling you to feel it. Anyways, while you were working as COO, you pushed through a certain technology that really wasn't quite ready. One that allowed the minds of your users to work in a virtual environment, and at a speed much faster than normal thought could work at, the Shade said. It was a technological breakthrough for the white-collar industry, allowing for much more work to be completed in half the time.
Yeah, it made the company. Made me.
That it did. And so here you are, the Wraith said, chortling.
I don't understand.
Part of the reason it was held up in development was because it tested poorly with some people. In cases of weak minds and extreme usage, the minds were digitized, directly loaded into the computers they were tied to. Except that when it happened, the subjects went comatose, never to waken. The bodies left behind were husks, empty.
Alex nodded. He remembered when they'd found the first test subject in such a state.
You'll remember you put lockout controls on the system in case people tried to tamper with it, turning it into a high-tech, room-sized paperweight. Then you pushed the project, the Wraith said. She made a gesture with a shadow hand, as if shoving something along.
Yes, we had them sign agreements, put warnings on it, and a lockout. They had to take the risk if they wanted to utilize the tech.
And yet, the lockout you put on it was very simple. So basic that anyone with a bit of time and a stray thought could circumvent it. Because you didn't allow any time to develop it. You deemed it an acceptable risk that would be out of your hands with the agreement you slapped on the whole thing. A risk others could take if they chose, the shadow continued. Those people who digitized themselves, at least a million at the time of your death, were all considered murdered. Those souls that showed up in the computer, that everyone thought were actual people, just part of a computer program. A complex one, but a program. Your engineers will figure that out in a decade or so. Much, much too late for you, though. The shadow tilted its head to one side. Alex had the feeling it was staring at him, gauging his reaction. He felt nothing. He already knew where she was going with this. There was no surprise. After being told even his heartbeat was false, Alex had managed to focus his entire being on controlling his soul, as he was now thinking of it. Alex was a stone. An uncaring one. His previous life mattered little to him. It had been a conquest of wealth that in the end, he could say that since he was here, amounted to nothing. Yes, this entire problem we've been discussing was declared the reason for their deaths. That perhaps with a bit more effort on your part, they might have understood what they were doing. Which leaves you with the blame. Hence, going to hell with a one-way ticket. I hear they even pulled up some heavy hitters just for you. Some real nasty pieces of work they keep on hold for the truly ugly souls.
Let's talk about this bargain, Alex said, changing the subject.
I like that. Quick to decide, and not even a word of argument. Yes, my bargain, then. It's simple. I want to send you to another universe, another world, where you'll be my agent. Your goal is to gather power for me. That's it, said the Wraith.
Mm-hmm. Too simple. Give me some details or I'll take the demons, Alex said, staring into the dark shroud.
You mean that, too. Fine, fine. All right, then. The details are equally simple. I'm a goddess of darkness and deals. Simply put, you'll have someone swear on my name for a deal, and I'll gain power. If the deal is skewed in your favor, I'll gain even more power. Please keep in mind that all deals must be voluntary, made without coercion. That's it, really. My name on the world in question is Leah.
Okay, Leah. Again, what you're describing is too simple. There must be more... The Shroud stood up suddenly, looking up and to the side at something only she could see.
Husband, dearest, my love, the Shade whispered, shivering. He's coming back. Coming back for me and my sisters. I hope I'm first.
The Shade's head snapped towards him again. Choose now, or I'll toss you out faster than a used rubber. I'll not waste a second with you that I could spend with him, the Shadow commanded. I accept. Now, in a flash, the Shadow enveloped him and the world of gray was gone, replaced with a world of hissing, screaming, stabbing, violent darkness. Murder most foul.
Oh, and I'm sending you with a crystal to measure your progress. When it's as dark as night and no light can shine through it, you'll have made enough deals to fulfill your obligation for the month, came the Wraith's voice. The world I'm sending you to is a real crapsack world, too. They'll eat you alive if you let them. It's kill or be killed. Show no mercy, and don't fuck up.
Alex opened his eyes, then shut them quickly as light blinded him.
Shit, he muttered. Oh, waking up, are you? Said a man's voice. Good. Sooner you wake up, sooner we can figure out how to get out of this death trap.
Death trap? Alex repeated.
Eh?
Alex pried his eyes open again. The light didn't hurt as badly this time, but it still made his eyes water. He was lying on what looked to be a rotten wooden floor. The worn boards had been improperly shaped. They bent and bowed, giving him a view of what could only be grass beneath. Lifting his head up, he looked around. Grasslands stretched as far as he could see. He was in a cage, in a line of cages. They all seemed to have wheels and were moving in a train-like fashion. Managing to lever himself up to a sitting position, Alex felt like he wanted to puke. His head hurt quite a bit. Reaching up, he felt around his skull. Behind his right ear, he found a rather large lump.
They gave you quite a thumping, huh?
Alex looked to the speaker. He was an unassuming man, dressed in ratty clothes with brown hair and blue eyes.
I guess so. I can't remember, Alex said.
He looked down at himself. He'd just been with Leah, and now he was here. She hadn't told him how he'd be arriving, or even his status. The clothes he had on looked identical to what the other man was wearing.
Great, that's great. They shoved you in here, told me not to touch you or they'd beat me to death, then ran off. You must be someone worth a copper or two, otherwise they'd have shoved you in with the rest. I'm just a merchant, but I'm worth a ransom, said the man, indicating the other cages.
Alex looked to the nearest cage. It was practically full to bursting with people.
Okay, so I'm someone of some import, though we're not sure in what regard.
Could have really used some more details, Leah.
A commotion broke out far up ahead. It sounded like shouts and someone banging pots and pans together. Oh, this might be our chance, said the man. If only...
A man Alex hadn't noticed went sprinting by. He must have been hiding between the cages.
There we go. I figured there was one watching, just in case. You really are worth a sack of gold, it seems, said the man. Right. Here's the plan. You boost me up. I knock the roof off, and then I open the gate.
Alex wasn't quite sure about that plan, but he didn't have anything better to suggest.
Fine. Hands together, then, and give us a lift, said the man.
Complying, Alex laced his fingers together and knelt down. The other man put one foot into Alex's hands and looked at him.
On three and up.
Alex nodded his head.
One, two, three.
Alex lifted and shoved, pushing the man up. Bits of what he assumed was roof material started to rain down on him as the man worked above.
Ha! Got it! Up we go!
The man lifted out of Alex's hand. Stepping back, he looked up to see how it was going. Wedged in the opening, the man was already wiggling his way out. It was obvious he'd be out in a matter of seconds.
Ah, thanks for that. Sorry to do this, but I don't have any way to actually open that gate. Good luck and all that, said the merchant.
Alex stared at the man's backside, uncomprehending. It wasn't until the man had both feet on the edge of the cage that Alex realized he was being left behind. Pure anger flooded him as he realized his mistake had been trusting someone else. He'd learned that lesson long ago, in his other life. He might be done with that life and planning to never look back, but he'd remember those hard-learned lessons. The chief amongst them, never trust anyone. With a shout, Alex slammed bodily into the side of the cage, rocking it violently to one side. Flailing his arms, the merchant shrieked and fell backward. Breaking through the roof, he crashed to the ground, back inside the cage. Gasping for breath, the merchant struggled to his hands and knees. Perfect. Alex took two steps, planted the third on the man's shoulders, then leapt up towards the hole. Missing his target, he crashed through the top, lost his balance, and flipped out the other side, landing in the grass with a thump. Ha! That worked, even if not as planned. Getting up quickly, far quicker than he could remember getting up in his old life, with his aching back and hips, Alex looked back into the cage.
Wait, wait,
the merchant pleaded. Pressing himself to the bars, he smiled at Alex.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. It was only a joke. A bad joke on my part, but a joke. That's all. Help me out here.
Sure, sure, of course, Alex promised easily. This'll be a great chance to test how far Leah's contracts go.
I'll need you to strike a deal with myself and my god, though. Make sure you don't betray me. You want me to swear on a god's name? Asked the man.
That's right. To swear on a god's name that you'll do everything I ask until I get you out of the cage, so we can get out fairly and cleanly. My part is to swear I'll do everything I can to get you out of that cage, Alex said.
The sounds from the front of the cage train were getting louder.
You don't have to do this. It'd be your choice and your choice alone. Though, to be fair, time is of the essence. More guards might come from the rear or back from the front. At that point, I'll not be able to help you.
Fine. Yes, I'll swear it. What's your god's name?
Leah, Alex said, looking around in each direction. He wasn't going to get caught if he could help it.
I'll have you swear it on her name, on pain of losing your soul.
Leah and my soul? The merchant shrieked.
Whimpering, he nodded his head regretfully. Unless he wanted to take his chances with the bandits, the merchant didn't have much of a choice.
I swear on Leah that I'll do everything you tell me to until we escape, on the condition that you will do everything to get me out of here, said the merchant.
I swear on Leah that I'll get you out of the cage one way or another,
Alex said, shaking the man's hand. Alex didn't see anything, and it didn't feel wrong. Actually, now that he thought about it, he felt a sense of correctness.
Great, great. So how are you going to get me out?
For a moment, Alex considered the possibilities. There were a number of things he could do to get the man out. In fact, he didn't doubt he could probably use this man and get a considerable amount of effort from him. Except that he'd already betrayed Alex once. And betrayals don't go unpunished. Looking around the ground, Alex found a branch as wide and as long as his arm. Picking it up, he wedged it between the bars and snapped it in half. Inspecting both breaks, he found one with definite potential to be used as a crude spear.
Here. Don't reveal where I went, or tell anyone about this. And use this to kill yourself. Probably stab yourself right here, Alex said, indicating where he felt the arteries in the neck were. Once you're dead, they'll probably toss your body out. I'll be responsible for you getting thrown out of the cage, because you'll be dead. This will complete my side of the bargain.
The merchant screeched at him, trying to stab him with the stick.
There was never any agreement to get you out alive. Don't blame me for making a bad deal. If only you hadn't tried to leave me behind, eh? Have fun debating between your soul and your life, Alex muttered.
Jogging off to the side, Alex got low in a decently sized patch of grass and pretended to be a hole in the ground. The merchant struggled with himself for several seconds, then tossed the stick to one side.
Giving up your soul, then. Good luck with that.
An hour passed before the train of sails suddenly started moving forward again. No one came back to check on them. Alex waited quietly in the brush. At the end of the line of cages was what looked to be a baggage cart, guarded by a single man with a short sword. He looked rather nervous. Considering no one had come back to talk about what had happened at the front, it wasn't that surprising. Alex would have been unnerved himself in that situation. When the last cart rolled past, Alex got to his feet and slunk over behind it, only stopping to pick up a stone as big as a baseball. As quietly as he could manage, he slithered up the back and over the top of the cart. With the guard directing all his attention toward the front, he didn't hear Alex. In fact, Alex went completely unnoticed, right up until he cracked the guard in the head with the stone. Stopping to steal everything worth anything and some better clothes, Alex loaded himself up, even going so far as to fill a backpack full of valuables. He also made sure to take anything that looked like paperwork. It might give him a clue as to anything about this place. Worst case, toilet paper. Setting off back the way he'd come with a backpack full of stuff, he started his new life without any idea what was going on. Out with the old, in with the new.
Chapter 2
Alex grunted and tried again. Struggling with a bar of metal in one hand and the back of a knife in the other, failure was his life. He was fighting with himself as much as with the tool. He wasn't even sure if he was doing it right.
"You're not doing it right,"
Leah said as she appeared on the opposite side of him. Her sudden appearance startled him, causing him to drop what he thought was the flint straight into the tinder pile.
"Considering I've been trying at this for about an hour, I imagined I was," Alex muttered.
After fishing the flint out of the pile, he gestured at it.
"Care to help me out, then? Because, at this rate, you might as well kill me. I have no idea where I am, what's going on, or even how to survive out here. I'm no woodsman. I'm a glorified desk jockey and phone hook," Alex said angrily.
"You're not wrong. I did send you off rather abruptly, but I'll not apologize for that. Nothing stands between me and my husband."
"Oh, and where is he then? I didn't think I'd see you again."
"He's asleep. He spent some time with each of us and then passed out. Now, as to my being here, you're right. I normally wouldn't. But you already sent a soul my way in the first day. That felt like something worth rewarding for having been here less time than it took to take a crap. Oh, and be sure to dig the crystal out of your pack and put it somewhere safe. It's already quite black, so you're paid up for the month, she said. And because you did so well, I'll provide you with some guidance. Head south. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west, by the way. Reach the city of Brit. Announce yourself as Alexander Brit, and the rest will be solved for you. Don't worry about not knowing anyone. I'll fill in the blanks as needed. Alex sighed, nodding his head. At least he had a direction now.
Great. Any chance you could...
He stopped when he realized she was already gone.
Help me with the fire, he finished.
Grumbling to no one, he gave up on it and got as comfortable as he could. He just hoped it wasn't going to get cold tonight.
That'd be great. Freeze to death, just as I start to figure out what the hell is going on.
Up ahead, two guards were dressed in what looked like rigid leather armor. Alex really wasn't quite sure since, well, he knew very little about arms and armaments. They appeared to be outfitted in what he could only assume were the local colors and guards' expectation. Behind them, a rather large wooden palisade stretched on and on for quite a while. Between two large wooden towers was an open gate. Inside that gate lay what looked like a scene from any number of fantasy movies. Houses, people, streets. It all looked like a documentary.
Well, so long as you add about 10 pounds of dirt to everyone and everything, it looks rather unhealthy.
With any luck, I can get this squared away, and maybe get some information. Maybe even a shower and a clean set of clothes. Not completely impossible, given that my family name is the same as the city. I imagine I might be in the leading family. Son of the... whatever... Maybe nephew? Son-in-law? Cousin?
Stop right there! Declare yourself, a guard said when Alex got close enough.
Taking a breath, Alex looked to the guard who'd confronted him.
I'm Count Britt! You're safe, said the second guard, bowing low to him immediately.
Apparently I'm a count. The count? Sounds like they didn't know where I was. The guard who'd challenged him bowed immediately after the second.
We can use this. If we're the count and we control everyone, could we support a Leah is the one to swear on type of campaign? Let's get everything set up on the assumption that, yes, we can, and go from there. And then...
Before Alex had time to react, a contingent of soldiers broke out of a tower door he hadn't noticed. Freezing up like a deer in the headlights, Alex didn't move as they rushed towards him. They came into formation around him and then closed in, pressing him tight between them. The guards at Alex's side secured him physically, and suddenly he was being hustled into the city. People were shoved out of the way. The soldiers moved at a pretty fast pace, more or less carrying Alex along at this point. Houses that resembled hovels went by quickly, replaced by houses that were clearly elevated in station. The buildings kept growing, ever larger. As he was rushed along, Alex couldn't help but wonder at the obvious disparity. Having classes is a positive thing, I would say. It's the gap between that causes problems, the disparity. As they raced him up along a boulevard, he finally had an idea where they were taking him. At the end of the boulevard was what he could only mentally label a castle wall. It was a large, impressive thing, made of stone.
Towers dotted its length, very clearly manned. No sooner than they'd rushed him up to the gate entrance, the guards fell away. A new set of guards, dressed in chainmail and simple metal breastplates, replaced the first set. Alex was pressed tightly in the center and whisked away, ever deeper into the city. Not fighting or even considering resisting, Alex did his best to avoid being a burden. He was fairly certain they were doing this out of fear for his safety, but no one ever made it without having a healthy amount of caution. In no time at all, Alex found himself in what was clearly a keep, a stone monstrosity that rose up in a secured location inside the wall. Not bothering to keep up with what was going on, Alex only paid attention when the guard suddenly peeled away from him. Standing in a richly appointed bedroom, he watched as maids and servants scurried out the door. The guards all bowed and exited as quickly as they'd rushed him in. All was silent as Alex was suddenly alone in what he assumed was his bedroom. A set of clothes was laid out on the bed, and fresh fruit and cheese on the table. Alex said, briefly inspecting the room. Hello? No one was there. Frowning, Alex went over to the clothing that had been laid out and lifted the tunic up. Turning slightly, he saw himself in the mirror for the first time. A green-eyed and brown-haired Alex Britt stared back at him. Alex was apparently young in years, perhaps mid-twenties to early thirties. Despite looking disheveled, he was clearly handsome and had a good physique, if without obvious muscle. Before he could do anything else, the door swung open and several men came in. "Count Britt," said the older gentleman in the center, bowing as soon as he spoke. "Walter Cyril, Chamberlain." The information came from nowhere and just popped up in his thoughts. What? Is this what she was talking about? Leah had promised him information, after all.
"Count," said the man, dressed in full armor on Walter's left.
He bowed as deeply as Walter, if hesitating for only a second.
"Maxwell Binge, City Commander."
The man on Walter's right bowed, saying nothing.
"Frederick Wills, envoy to the king."
"All right, I'm guessing these three must be responsible for the city when I'm gone. Otherwise, why would they rush to see me?"
"Temporary Council of Britt, enacted by the envoy to govern the city in the count's absence. No other living members of the Britt family exist."
"Okay. Handy for the information to just provide itself. It'd be nice if it happened in advance, but whatever." "Greetings, Walter, Maxwell, Frederick. I apologize in advance, but I'm afraid I took a blow to the head. Some of my memories and even my thoughts are a bit fuzzy," Alex said, trying to get ahead of anything strange they might notice about him.
"Of course, Count," Walter said as all three men stood up. "No man could undergo what you have and come out the same, I'm sure."
The envoy gave him a predatory smile.
"We're simply glad to have you back, Count," said Frederick.
"Uh-huh. You were probably hoping to benefit from this. You may not have been responsible, but you're still a problem, I bet."
"Sir, my sincerest apologies. This is entirely my fault," Maxwell said, bowing again and then falling to a knee.
"Kidnapping and capture of Alexander Britt was due to Alexander Britt's illegal gambling activities."
"Of course it was, because only a person willing to bargain their soul to Leah would be part of a deal like this. And clearly the previous Alex has done so, since I now live in his body. So I'm not a good person, I imagine." "That's fine. It makes this easier."
"Ah, no, Max," Alex said, shortening the man's name. "It wasn't. This was my fault, and I've learned from my mistakes this time. It'll not happen again, and I plan on making sure this is the last time you will ever be put in this position."
Max lifted his head and stared hard at Alex.
Walter looked rather confused himself. He opened his mouth, only to close it again.
I mean it. I know this was my own fault, and that'll be the last of that, Alex said, giving them a smile.
I can do this. It's just like managing a company from the top. Not a big deal. We just have to keep everything in line for the CEO and the board.
I'd like to put several meetings together today, Alex continued before anyone could respond. And I'd like our accounts audited. I have a sudden need to know where everything is and how much of it we have. After that, I'd like to have performance reviews for everyone in the keep itself, then the inner courtyard, and after that, everyone we're paying for in the city. I imagine it'll be a good time for a pay scale evaluation to make sure we're at market value.
Good time for a loyalty check. Loyalty to the Count is ensured by an allegiance oath that brings death and the loss of one's soul if broken. The souls are sent to whomever the allegiance oath is sworn to. All those sworn will wear pins that hold their oaths on their lapels or collars, in the crest of those they are sworn to. Pins can be determined as genuine by simply touching them.
Huh. Reacts to my thoughts, too, huh? Unnerving. A bit too convenient for my own liking. Or my paranoia. Or both. But that makes it easier, I suppose, as far as loyalty goes. Don't have to worry about internal politics.
Max stood up slowly, his armor rattling as he did so. Walter and Frederick both wore shocked faces.
Now that Alex looked, Max and Walter also both wore pins on their collars. The design on both was a square with a blue background. On that field of blue, a slash ran from one corner to another in black, and a raven sat across the middle. The one on Frederick's was different, a golden crown within a purple square.
Guessing the blue raven is me, and the crown is the king. What else would matter to a medieval city? Food and trade, probably. More than likely a silver and gold standard, right? No paper currency.
At the same time, we'll need to evaluate our trade, both incoming and outgoing. Doubly so for taxes and tariffs. And last, but probably not least, food. I'd really like to get a handle on where we are with production, consumption, and forecasted harvest numbers. Admittedly, that'll be weak, given that we don't control the weather. But it's worth doing, if at least to have a gauge to work from.
Max, Walter, and Frederick all stood motionless, unspeaking.
Is there a problem with any of those requests? Alex asked, looking from one to another.
Frederick cleared his throat and held out a pin.
Here is your allegiance pin. I think it would be good for you to fasten it back to your collar. It was sent to us with your ransom letter, the envoy said.
Alex nodded his head, took the pin from the man, and held it up in his hand.
As you like, Alex said, then turned and fastened it to the collar of the shirt laid out for him. Once it was in place, he pulled off the clothes he was wearing and got into the ones laid out for him. Alex had led a full life, and stripping down to his undershorts in front of three men didn't disturb him in the least.
Having to do this for some of those cute female doctors every year was more embarrassing. Always ended up with the young ones who had no experience. Stupid low-budget health plan.
In no time at all, he was dressed in the new clothes, idly fingering the pin as he turned to the envoy.
They're nervous by my change in personality. That's fine. We'll blame this all on my ordeal and say I've grown into my title.
Reaching up, he pressed his fingers to the pin on his collar. I, Alex Britt, remain a faithful retainer to the true and only king. But I'll no longer be blind to my own duties. Anything else you'd have me take care of? Or can we move on to my requests? Alex asked.
All three men waited, as if expecting something to happen to Alex.
If you three aren't up to the task, I don't have any other choice but to start looking for...
No, no, sire. I can take care of everything you've asked, Walter said, hurrying forward two steps and bowing deeply again.
My liege, Max said, bowing as well. I'll not fail.
Great. Now, Fred, can I call you Fred? I want to talk about the laws of the land versus the laws of the county, and where I can institute some new policies, Alec said, walking over to a table. He pulled out a chair and sat down. With a smile for Fred, he gestured to a nearby chair. Now to find out how much leeway we truly have. Alec stared out the window of his bedroom. It had been a month since he'd entered the city. He'd been surprised by how quickly he'd adapted to a fairly medieval life. Everyone chalked his change in personality, needs, and desires down to what had happened to him, and Alec would be the last person to dissuade them of that belief. In the same period of time, he'd gotten a full rundown of everything ongoing in his lands. The long and short of it was Alec had been the major contributing factor to the county losing money. His domain was rather successful with food and trade alone. This success was mostly owed to his father, who had set down policies and procedures to encourage growth, development, and self-improvement. Now, farmers owned their lands and invested heavily in their development. Merchants owned and ran companies that operated directly out of Brit. The roads were patrolled at no expense to the people, and merchants were taxed at a level low enough to stimulate trade, but high enough to fill the treasury. After his talk with Fred, Alec had found Crown Law only worked for things needing the king's attention. Luckily for Alec, the king concerned himself with little outside of his personal pleasantries and treachery. On top of that, Alec was the only ranked member of the peerage in all of Brit, which meant that almost everything having to do with the county of Brit was the domain of the Count of Brit. Alec had immediately moved to decrease the power and influence of the envoy, removing him from anything and everything that wasn't commissioned or put in place by the king, and leveraging a buyout of all the man's interests and businesses. As if sensing the dramatic change in the situation, Fred had immediately put in a request to return to the capital. Of course, Alec had agreed to that immediately. And that had been the end of any concerns of internal politics. Sighing, he wondered how to bring about a situation where he could leverage deals made to Leah. From the casual conversations he'd had with people, he'd learned they viewed Leah with extreme distrust and distaste. Those who swore on her were deemed unclean and possibly evil. Quite the difficulty there. It means any deals I make have to be done in such a way that secrecy can be guaranteed. Glancing down to the multifaceted crystal in his hand, he couldn't help but frown. The whole thing fit in his palm. It had been dark as ink the day previous, and now it was as clear as glass. The monthly debt had come into effect. Unfortunately, Alec wasn't sure how he wanted to proceed with his deals.
"Is that it?"
asked the peasant woman in his bed.
"Yeah, you're done. Keep to the oath or lose your life and soul, Marta," Alec said, reminding her of the agreement she'd sworn to.
"Of course. Your gold bought your secret as well as me," Marta said.
Alec didn't bother to turn around and look at her. She'd hoard herself to him for 2 gold coins. It was less than they probably spent on his breakfast, but he knew it was more than she could have hoped to earn. Most women didn't hold professions, and those who did received pay in food or barter rather than coin.
"I'd be willing to do this again another time," Marta the whore said.
"I'll keep that in mind. Keep to the story. Leave," Alec said, flicking a hand over his shoulder. He'd found her wanting to apply for a job as a maid earlier in the day. Struck by a sudden idea, he'd propositioned her, offering her a chance to make more than she ever could as a maid. He'd figured having a woman sell herself for coin and swear it on Leah might fill in a bit of the crystal. But the crystal appeared as clear as it had earlier,
without even a shadow of change. Apparently, having a whore sell herself does little to nothing. Is it because Marta has no value? Because she was willing to do it without a worry? It was something to consider, for sure. Deals may have more intrinsic value than he'd originally banked on. He'd have to see where he could take it. He wasn't done experimenting with degradation. After all, pride and morality were expensive, right? At least I got laid. Pity she was awful. Chapter 3
"My lord," Walter said, bowing from the doorway, "your receiving hall has been prepared for this month's justice." "Huh?"
"Month's justice. A formal hearing conducted by the Count of Brit. It is held at the start of the month and the middle of the month, depending on caseload. Interview defenders have committed offenses that exceed a set value in fines, or have committed crimes of heinous or extreme natures. The gods do not intervene in the courts of men. Justice is a public spectacle, not fit for the heavens. All verdicts are final regardless of evidence, witnesses, or general belief. The Count is the final word in this court. If the Count does not wish to rule on a case, he can dismiss it to a lower court magistrate for a formal hearing."
"Oh, great. Just what I wanted to do today. This management garbage would be more suited to a pencil pusher with a name like Felix. I'm better off sticking to deals and directions to hit company goals."
Alex didn't respond, only nodded his head. He'd play it by ear and just roll with it. Walter got him dressed, prepared, and ready for the ceremony. It took an hour in the end before he was seated on his throne, as Alex called it. Due to royal prestige laws, it couldn't be on a dais, nor could the height of the throne go above 5 feet. There was even a limit on how much it could cost. Glaring at the armrest, the gems in which could probably fund the entire county for a year, Alex waited for the first case. As he sat there, a sudden idea struck him. She said deals had to be voluntary. She never said anything about the circumstances. Could I offer deals to prisoners? Female prisoners? Make them offer up their pride and morality. Let's test it.
"You," Alex said to the dark-dressed guard in charge of the prisoners here.
"My lord," the helmeted man responded.
"Is the dungeon in good repair? Is there anything that needs to be done with it?"
"My lord, the keep's dungeon is in very good repair, although the city's dungeon has a cell or two that could use some work."
"Good. This may not be something you can answer, but are there private rooms that can be converted for political prisoners or prisoners of station in the keep?"
There are, but they haven't been used since your father's time."
"Get them cleaned up and ready immediately.
In addition to that, clean up the dungeons and prepare them for new prisoners. I want them held to such a level I could reasonably put a member of the peerage in there if I had to. I want both the keep dungeons and the private rooms habitable by tomorrow morning. Let me know if you need manpower or money," Alex said.
"I'll take care of it, my lord," the man said, straightening up.
"And what's your name?"
"My name is Douglas, my lord."
"Douglas, consider this an opportunity for promotion. Find a replacement for you here and now, and then go take care of this task."
The man saluted hurriedly and rushed away.
"That'll do just nicely to start with."
An older man Alex vaguely recognized stepped forward. The room fell silent immediately.
Probably the court bailiff or announcer or something.
Beside him, a man was pushed forward at spear tip. He looked to be in a sorry state of affairs.
"The first case to be heard, an unsanctioned duel. At the end of the duel, one party killed the other, and now the charge of murder is to be determined. There are 15 witnesses.
The defendant has asked to be remanded to a magistrate due to the fact that he...
Granted.
Next,
Alex said.
The defendant whooped loudly and dropped to his knees.
Thank you, Lord Alex. Thank you.
All right, said the older man. The, next case is,
The older man turned and gestured at what looked like a subordinate.
Bert, that's his name.
Alex smiled, suddenly remembering the announcer's name.
The second case to be heard today is that of Lady Griffin. She's been accused of tax evasion, tax fraud, and theft, Bert said.
Scandalized whispers tore through the crowd as all eyes turned towards a young woman escorted up to the front of the hall. She was tall, possibly even 6 feet. Slim and willowy, she wore a dress that didn't do much for her.
Alex had the impression she had a better figure than what she was showing.
Dark blonde hair and blue eyes with fine features. He was momentarily captivated.
She was definitely on the prettier side of what he'd seen since coming here. He knew her title wasn't for show, but that she wasn't quite nobility either. If she was here in Brit, she was from a branch of a low-ranked noble family somewhere else. Just barely of the peerage. Barely.
I would like to grant Lady Griffin the chance to have this case conducted privately between herself and myself.
Please consider this a gesture of consideration, Lady Griffin, but you have no need to accept it if you would prefer to have this dealt with publicly.
Alex made the offer as neutrally as he could. The room fell silent again. All eyes turned to Lady Griffin.
Some would think all Alex wanted was an excuse to use her sexually if he didn't make sure he granted her the choice of holding the case in the open.
Lady Griffin said. One hand drifted up to her mouth, as if she were contemplating her options.
Truly, you can decline the private case handling if you prefer to handle this in view of the public,
Alex said, reaffirming his statement.
I choose to have this made private, my lord, Lady Griffin said, curtsying nearly to the ground.
Take her to the Keep dungeon for now. We'll speak again later today about your accommodations and case. I'll be sure to notify your household of the change in your location,
Alex said, bowing his head to the lady.
Bert flicked a hand at a pair of guards, who quickly took custody of Lady Griffin and escorted her out of the hall. The next case is against one Riley, no given last name. The charges are conspiracy, treason to the count, attempted escape from prison, and operating an illegal gambling facility,
Bert said.
She has already been found guilty of other crimes previous to this, and is under fines exceeding 100 gold coins and a death sentence.
A young woman was pushed out from the remaining prisoners to stand next to Bert. She was young, probably a month over 18 if he had to put a guess to it. Green eyes regarded him sullenly. The left side of her face carried a significant bruise, and was partially swollen, one eye opened only to a slit. Her pale skin made her dull red hair brighter, even though she was filthy-looking and covered in dirt. Despite all that, Alex thought she was attractive underneath it all. Her body was quite eye-catching to boot. She had an overwhelming hourglass figure that threatened to exceed the limits of her ripped clothing. The cheap and torn tunic that fell to her knees did little to hide her flesh.
Treason? Treason to me? Alex asked, leaning forward.
Lies, she murmured, her eyes falling to the ground. It was an obvious deflection, and it carried no passion. To Alex, it had the sound of a lie.
A guard slammed her to the ground, forcing her to her knees. Grunting, she knelt on all fours in supplication.
He could see straight down her tunic, getting a perfect view of her rather well-endowed chest.
Alex held up a hand to the guards. Lies, you say? We'll discuss this further. Chances are you'll dance at the end of a rope by this evening,
but you'll get your chance to argue your case with me. Though I see no way a nasty thing like yourself could pay off the 100 gold, let alone the charges. Send her to my dungeon under the care of Douglas as well. If anyone harms her, I'll see to them first before I see to her, Alex said, shaking his head. Several guards picked her up and dragged her away, her feet scraping along behind her and her head hanging low. Bert paused and then looked up to the Count.
That is all for today, my lord, he said, though I do believe we'll have more at the mid-month. There are a number of cases I'm setting up for you.
Good. I'll be having someone come by to inspect the dungeons as a whole soon, and the guards as well. I'd like to make sure our prisoners are receiving fair treatment that doesn't damage them. If I find out, Alex said, leaning forward and raising his voice, that my guards are abusing prisoners in any way, I'll execute them without a trial. And believe me, I will find out. Even if I have to pull on every single oath you all swore to when you joined my service. And if you have abused prisoners previously, best you leave my city now, before I find you.
Prisoners who haven't been abused will be more likely to respond to my deals without fear of repercussions. We have to make sure we meet the by-choice requirement. Alex inspected the cell with a critical eye. It was clean, dry, sufficiently warm, and had a minimal amount of furniture, including a privacy screen for use of the bedpan. A metal tray sat on the table with some thin soup, a heel of bread, and a piece of fruit. Next to it was a large pitcher of water. It was enough food for a single meal. If served 3 times a day, this would barely meet the calorie needs of a prisoner. Each cell was its own unit. There was a shared door one could use to travel from cell to cell, but that was the only interconnection. Another door led to a hallway that ran the length of the dungeon. There would be little to no chance for prisoners to speak with one another, let alone hear anything outside their cells with the doors shut and locked. Douglas had certainly done more than had been expected of him. Sitting in the wooden chair at the table, Lady Griffin was watching him. As if unsure what to expect, she wore a look made of equal parts trepidation and false confidence.
Good, Alex said, nodding his head once. He turned to Douglas and led him away, far enough that the lady wouldn't hear them. Consider this dungeon yours to maintain, as well as the private apartments. Hire a guard force specific to this area. Tell them they'll be sworn to a different oath, though, and they'll make more in pay to match it. This goes for you as well. Are you willing to take the position? If so, double whatever your current rate of pay is. I'll take your oath later, which will really just be you swearing to the previous oath and to keep all that happens here secret. On pain of your life and soul, to Leah.
Douglas paused, then nodded once, his helmeted head bobbing.
Yes, my lord, I accept and will do so. Can I move my family into the keep? He asked. Yes, that's not a problem. Make the arrangements with Walter. Anything else?
No, my lord.
Thank you, my lord.
Good. Go guard the door. Let no one in. You and your guards are to knock on a cell door before entering. They cannot enter unless given permission by the occupant. This goes for everyone but you, and you may only enter if it's an emergency, or I've told you to. After this, start working on your hiring. Oh, and how many can we fit down here?
10, my lord.
Alex nodded, then turned and walked back to the front of Lady Griffin's cell.
My lord? Lady Griffin asked, her voice firmer than her bravery.
Lady Griffin, this is not a formal hearing and won't be taken into account when it's time for judgment. This conversation is more in regard to your stay here with me, Alex said, walking up to the steel bars.
I see. I take it this is the part where you ravage me on the bed? She asked.
Hardly. This is the part where I ask you if you'd like to improve your conditions here while your case moves along.
Okay. Yes, I would. I find a lady of my station deserves a bit better than a cell.
I would agree, but I can't give that to you before we enter into a contract.
Ah,
So you'd have me give my body to you instead for a better sell?
Humph. Actually, no. Perhaps you should allow me to finish before you jump to conclusions.
Lady Griffin frowned, her brows drawing down.